And the atrocities are mounting there. They've been ongoing, of course, but it's getting worse by the day. Sorry to leave it on such a low note, but I mean, this is what it is.
That's
I
okay.
wish you all the success until we can talk
Yeah.
again. I want everyone else
Okay.
to stick around. Dawn Stanford is going to be back talking about the salmon industry. Thanks again, Dorothea, for coming on, eh?
Thank you for having me.
Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone.
After a century of dispossession, 100 years of broken resolutions. Now that there's been a massacre here to mark every day of the year. After they buried 1 million children, after they starved the whole population, now they say it's time to recognize Palestine. So many years since the Oslo Accords, with occupied lands ever hurtling towards complete annexation by settling Jews, as the pogromists light every possible fuse. After building the settlements and burning down whatever was left of these stolen towns, now they say it's time to recognize Palestine. After all, Gaza has been turned to dust since Jenin has been mangled to rubble and rust. After it's established the Zionist way is to kill starving children at the dawn of each day. They take their concerns very seriously while the killers gaslight us all on BBC. Now they say it's time to recognize Palestine. When the summer is done, if all of Hamas hands over their guns, if they give up the soldiers they've held so far, if they let Jared Kushner build a 5-star resort on the ruins beside the Med, after all of the Palestinians are dead, now they say it's time to recognize Palestine.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, a massive die-off at 3 of fish-breeding giant Cermaq's open-pen Atlantic salmon plants over the summer was reported just last week. Though opponents of the farm said they suspected problems months ago, the company admitted finally their operations had experienced, quote, elevated mortalities at its open-pen farm in Clackwat Sound and in several other areas, blaming harmful plankton for the hundreds of thousands of animals lost. This secrecy and impunity enjoyed by Cermaq and its few fellow fish-breeding behemoth corporations is another reason those living nearby and those making a living from the waters occupied by this industry say they want it ended. And the government here has largely agreed. Dawn Stanford is a self-described extreme activist and kayak vigilante who has campaigned against toxic salmon farms for 25 years. He's currently director of Scammon Scotland and global director of the Real Salmon Farming Resistance. More than a dozen years ago, the Englishman lived down here in BC and fought then to have salmon factories polluting our waters shut down. Welcome back to the program, Dawn.
Yeah, it's great to be back. And my first job in 2004 was with Friends of Clackwat Sound in Clackwat Sound. So I'm horrified by the mass mortalities there.
Horrified, perhaps, but not surprised. This isn't the first time it's happened. And there was reports, I think it was January of 2024, there was another similar event. And not to say there hasn't been in between, but who's to say? Don, we spoke a few months ago, actually, and even as we were speaking about the costs and hazards of the industry, thousands of fish just up the street were dying horrible deaths. You write that if these fish were cows or sheep or chicken, we would never accept the mortality levels that are common and commonly occurring on these I hesitate to use the word farms continually, but never mind these elevated levels of mortalities that Cermaq is now fessing up to. What, Don, are these business as usual numbers, and what's the cause of these thousands of creatures dying in these pens?
Well, the second one first, the simple cause is they're just farming too many fish in too small an area. So you've got infectious diseases, you've got welfare problems, and you've got these mass mortalities. In Scotland, the Scottish government have just released mortality data. They flipped that to call it survival data. So the survival in the last year class was 61.8%. So you flip that and it's 38%, so nearly 40% of the fish are dying, and that's just in the sea cage phase of production. Many more die in the land-based freshwater systems, the hatcheries and the smolts. And this is not just a Scottish problem. You've got Norwegian television right at the moment talking about mortalities in Norway. You've got a report in Australia with the Tasmanian government of mass mortalities. And then you've obviously got the stuff going on in Clackwood Sound. So the common denominator, wherever you operate salmon farms, the fatal flaw is the deadly nature of salmon farming. You've got infectious diseases, you've got lice infestation, and you've got these shocking mortality levels. If ramblers or people were walking through fields and they were seeing 4 out of every 10 cows or sheep with their hooves in the air, they'd be horrified. But this happens out of sight, out of mind. People can't see it, which is why it's very important for video footage, for drone footage, for freedom information to flush this information out, because these companies are trying to hide the information.
Well, and of course, fish don't express themselves the way those animals would, screaming in pain and agony. Nobody can hear the fish. You can't hear the fish scream underwater.
Yeah, we need to give fish a voice. And thankfully, in British Columbia, you have champions like Alexandra Morton. You have Clackwood Action, Dan and Bonnie, who are flushing out this information. You have brave eco-warriors and First Nations. First Nations leaders were in Port Alberni signing a declaration to try and get salmon farms out. That was just over the weekend. That was immensely powerful, where people were coming together to speak out, to shout out against salmon farming. And that spread all around the world. But I think what's happened in British Columbia has lit a touch paper in Tasmania, in Scotland, in Iceland, in Ireland, in the Faroes, Norway, wherever salmon farm operates, you've got these shocking numbers. The diseases might be different. The names of the diseases might change over time, but the problem remains exactly the same. Before I started with Friends of Clackwood Sound in 2004, like 20 years ago, there was an IHN outbreak in Clackwood Sound, mass mortalities. And there was huge mortalities in Chile as well, where salmon farm companies have fined. I think the message for these Norwegian multinationals is just fish off back to Norway. Take your dirty, disease-ridden fish back to Norway. They're impinging upon the Clackwood Sound UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. They're impinging upon, impacting negatively on tourism, on First Nations, on wild fish, on marine mammals. It's a net loss. And the sooner we get rid of these salmon farms and abolish salmon farming around the world, the better.
Well, now on the island here in Vancouver Island, up atop of the island in near Port McNeil, there's a company called Kutera, and it's run by First Nations. It's an on land, land-based pens. When we're talking about the suffering of the animals, I guess it doesn't matter if they're in the ocean or out of it.
Yeah, I've done cigarette packets, which I was sued for likening salmon farming with big tobacco and salmon farming kills. I think the closed containment situation, I did a packet of closed containment like Marlboro Lights You know, this is like low tar salmon farming, but from a welfare point of view, close containment, whether it's in land-based systems or floating in the sea, could be even more of a welfare problem. It may appease some of the environmental concerns. I know Living Oceans and some groups will obviously prefer closed containment systems over open net cages. But from a welfare point of view, and even from an ecological point of view, you still got wild fish as feed used to source as a fuel supply for those farmed salmon. So however you slice it, salmon farming, whether it's on land, whether it's in freshwater, marine water, or if it's in Canada or Norway or Chile, it's inherently unsustainable. It's producing an unhealthy product, and it's a welfare nightmare and environmental pariah. So we should be boycotting it and avoiding it like the proverbial plague. You know, we've got Christmas coming up. That's when you'll see smoked salmon on sale in supermarkets. It's a big period for these companies to get profits in, but it's killing off nature, it's killing off wild salmon, it's killing off the farm salmon themselves, as you can see from, you know, watching CBC and Czech news and stuff on the Clackwood Sound situation. It's horrifying, but as you say, it's not surprising.
Well, and I see you posted a story about the Cermaq losing, I think, or is it Maui, Scotland, losing its so-called royal charter to supply the royal house with salmon, something it's enjoyed for 25 years or 35 years, rather.
Yeah, this is a world exclusive. We've just broken this through the Daily Telegraph, which is a big kind of right-wing newspaper. But King Charles and the royal household since 1990. So for 35 years, Maui, which is the largest salmon farm company in Scotland, largest in the world, the largest in British Columbia, has had its royal warrant rescinded. It's been revoked. And it's not, this is a big deal, because Maui talk about how it's been certified and greenwashed by all these bodies. The Soil Association certify it as organic. There's RSPCA assured on the welfare friendly front, but it makes a big deal of this royal warrant. So King Charles has basically said, you're not welcome. He's decrowned, dethroned Maui, and Maui's been reduced to being in the gutter like the former Prince Andrew, you know, because it's person non grata. Maui's like that.
Well, seeing the pictures
you don't talk about.
Well, in the accompanying photos, there's a distant telephoto, and again, it reiterates this, the need to have eyes on these operations. But and we'll get back to that. But the picture of fishermen on the dock pounding with poles, salmon to death on the deck there, reminded me of those iconic photographs of the harp seals, the baby harp seals being pounded by the seal fishers in Newfoundland so many years ago that led to an international furore. Do you think that
King Charles has obviously had a U-turn after 35 years of royal support. He's made a decision during this year, 2025. There's a couple of triggers, reasons why, but people have been honour him. He is a passionate angler, a wild fisherman. He's patron of the Atlantic Salmon Trust. And we know he's taken Harry and William and Princess Di fishing at Balmoral. And thankfully, he's done the right thing. And this video footage from the Green Britain Foundation may have been the last nail in the coffee for Maui's royal warrant. And if you just look at the data, and this is not data cooked up by extreme activists or environmentalists. This is data published by the industry themselves. Some of the mortality rates on salmon farms can be over 80%. So that's 4 out of every 5 fish dying. That's just shocking numbers. And the stuff that you're seeing out in Clackwood Sound is on a par with that. And it's being hidden, it's being a kept secret. But thanks to Freedom of Information, Access to Information, and thanks to champions like Clackwood Action and Alexander Morton and others, the public are seeing this for themselves. And thanks to video footage and films that are being screened in British Columbia around the world, the public are seeing this, and they're revolting. Even the king, the monarch, who I guess is your king as well as my king. Mm-hmm. I'm a Republican. I don't believe in kings. I think the king of fish, the Atlantic salmon, is the true king, and we should worship wild salmon, the altar of wild salmon. But I think the fact that King Charles has told Maui to fish off, and Maui's not welcome in the royal household. He's not welcome at the table. But Maui fish is not fit for a king. It's not fit for a king, a queen. It's not fit for the royal corgis or even Prince Andrew or us common people.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking tonight with Don Staniford. Don is a self-described extreme activist, kayak village vigilante. He's campaigned against toxic salmon farms for years. He's currently director of Scammon Scotland and global director of the Real Salmon Farming Resistance. Yeah, well, Don, I mean, there is a sort of with the grace of the king. And there's a lot of people that think, oh, well, if the king's going to eat it, then it's got to be good enough for me. I wonder if all those people that have enjoyed banquets at Windsor Castle and other places and had salmon on the menu now might be spitting, thinking, oh, my God, they're serving us that. It's Python-esque almost, you know, the salmon.
Well, you've got Donald Trump, who was at a recent royal banquet. And there was a book written, The Black Lock, by Peter May. He wrote the trilogy, The Chessmen, quite big bestsellers around the world. But he said that farm salmon was like Donald Trump with a fake tan. And now you've got King Charles kind of revealing Maui to be an imposter. And it's snuck into the royal household for the last 35 years. And it's dressed itself up as healthy and sustainable and welfare friendly. But video footage and damning data has blown that image completely out the water. And the fact that you've got King Charles revoking its royal warrant really is a watershed moment. And you put that together with what's happening in Canada with the video footage there. It's prime time. Opposition in Norway at the moment. They've exposed illegal exports of wounded salmon. And in Tasmania, you've got independent MPs elected to the Tasmanian Parliament opposed to salmon farming. So you've got this groundswell of worldwide opposition. And you can trace this back to Alexandra Morton. 2016, she took out First Nations to view dead salmon in the Broughton Archipelago in their territory. And that's what triggered more filming, Sea Shepherd coming in, Pamela Anderson, and then you got Ernest Alfred, Jugs Kwoksister, and others occupying Maui salmon farms, leading to legal action, but also leading to this opposition and Trudeau and the Canadian government pledging to remove open net cages by was 2025. And I think they've punted it to 2029. But it's Alexander Morton, British Columbia, First Nations, we owe them a debt around the world because they have led this. And in British Columbia, you are the hotbed, the lightning rod that sends shockwaves around the world, around the salmon farming industry, because together we can abolish salmon farming.
Well, we celebrated when the 2025 ruling came down. And as you say, it was punted up the road to 2029. And I mentioned the last time we spoke, there's a thing in British Columbia called talk and log. And this is the long attempts to stop clear-cut logging in this province, so famous or infamous that... yeah, sure. We'll just keep on talking and saying we're going to do the right things, and we'll be logging all the while. And there's still the fish business still goes on. But even at the heart of this in Norway itself, you highlight a report by NRKNO, Norwegian TV network, that even where at the heart of the industry, they're exposing the horrors, and the pictures here are truly revolting. I wonder, Don, I mean, if so many fish are dying, is there some correlative there with human health? I mean, as you say, it's not fit for the corgis or even Prince Andrew or the man formerly known as Prince. But I mean, Can we say that this stuff really is harmful for human consumption? I mean, it looks like it might be.
Well, I think if you're eating something that's got amoebic gill disease, it's got pancreas disease, it's got heart disease problems, and then you throw in pisky chlamydia to people, people are revolted at the thought that their healthy marketed food, their food, their farm salmon stamped with an organic logo, branded as welfare friendly. You know, they're horrified when you point that out to them. And then also remember the list of toxic chemicals used on salmon farms. You've got Richard Flanagan's book Toxic, which is about salmon farming. He's a Booker Prize winner, Richard Flanagan. And his book is about salmon farming in Tasmania called Toxic. But that could equally be written about Canada, Scotland, Norway. Because if you're cramming this migratory species in Europe, we farm Atlantic salmon, and even in the Pacific, you farm Atlantic salmon for some unheard of reason. Mm-hmm. But you're cramming these fish at high stocking densities. They get diseases and parasites, and they use toxic chemicals. So some of the Clackwood Sound deaths are due to the use of these delicing machines, these mechanical devices, the thermolyser, the hydrolyser. They're trying to wash these disease-ridden fish. But this is a welfare nightmare. That's why a lot of fish are dying in these incidents. And then there's also algal blooms. And with climate change and rising water temperatures, as certainly in Scotland, the waters are just too hot. They're too warm to farm salmon. They're dying in the millions, maybe over 30 million in Scotland. I don't know how many die in British Columbia, but you've got some of the data finally being flushed out through Freedom Information. I think that's the big power. We can win this battle through access to information and also through the video surveillance, which has led me to get into hot water legally and got Alex and others banned in British Columbia back in 2018 when they tried it.
Well, yeah, Alex Morton's work on the sea lice was the milestone reports that she came out with. I think, if I remember rightly, the reason that it's Atlantic salmon here is because they couldn't succeed in with Pacific salmon. There's five different varieties, but none of them they couldn't do it here. They none of the fish were viable, if I'm remembering this right, and. You describe the salmon as the king of fish, and here it's even more revered, especially amongst First Nations. I mean, it is a cornerstone of life, and it has been for untold thousands of years. I have trouble wondering, I'll fess up to being vegetarian, and I don't eat fish either, that are we why people defend or attack the farm fish industry, saying, well, you should be eating wild salmon instead and support the wild salmon economy and so on. I mean, should we, given climate change and the stressors being put on the migratory fish, especially the Pacific varieties, should we be eating salmon at all?
Well, these are very interesting questions. Paul Greenberg, the New York Times, he wrote a book called Four Fish, and he answered that question himself. He said that he'd only really eat fish that he could catch himself or he knows from the fishermen. When I lived in Tofino and I worked for Friends of Clackwood Sound, I lived close to Jeff Micus, he was a fisherman. So I used to eat fish directly from a fisherman. And when I was in above the Fraser River, we used to get a fish from First Nations. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody knows where the fish comes from, but certainly there's been periods in my life where I've boycotted fish completely. I've been vegan, I've been vegetarian. I think we need to think more clearly and cleverly about our food choices. And the answer will depend upon, you know, your time of life, your location. And sometimes it's dependent on your income. If you look at First Nations, you know, they're sustained by this free flow of wild fish, not just First Nations, but fishermen across the world. Historically, even the River Clyde in Glasgow and the Thames in London, these were salmon rivers. You know, people sustain their livelihoods not by going to supermarkets, not by going to Walmart, but by catching fish, catching salmon. So we can't lose that. It's a difficult one. But, you know, people have to think for themselves and make their own choices.
Well, you mentioned Tavish Campbell. If people go online, if you go to YouTube and look and do a search for Blood in the Water, Tavish Campbell, it shows his underwater footage of these pens and the blood and guts and other pollutants coming out of them, affecting the the environment all around them. You mentioned that the writ against your going near or on these outfits and filming them. You've been fighting this in court for ages. What's the status of your court travails as of now?
I owe Maui £120,000, so I don't know if that's 200,000 Canadian. I owe another Norwegian multinational Scottish Sea Farms nearly £30,000. And then I'm in court. I'm still fighting the Faroese Sal Monster Bakkafrost. So that's due to go to trial in April next year, 3 days in court. I've got thankfully raised money through GoFundMe, and I thank people for supporting that. And it's a long, hard struggle. But if you know your cheesy Gandhi quotes that I may have mentioned before, Gandhi said, first they ignore us, then they laugh at us, then they fight us, then we win. I think we're at the process where we're fighting them hand-to-hand combat. And, if you watch the video from the First Nations getting together for the potlatch in Port Alberni against fish farms, salmon farms over the weekend, you can see that there's a resurgence of fight there from First Nations and fishermen and environmentalists banding together against these Norwegian multinationals, whether it's in British Columbia or all around the world. So we're going to fight them, and it's a fight to the death. And we need to abolish all salmon farming. The halfway house of closed containment, I don't think, is sustainable. It's not welfare friendly. I think we should just try and kick out this malignant cancer on our coasts.
Yeah. Well, the GoFundMe site is Stop the Sal Mafia Privatizing Public Waters in Scotland. That's Don Staniford. And I noticed in the address, it didn't use the dollar sign S that you use for Stop the Sal Mafia. So it's just Stop the Al Mafia Privatizing Public Waters in Scotland. But that's a GoFundMe site to help Don's court travails, and I'm sure in the long run you shall prove out to have been on the right side of history, Don. Thanks a lot for coming on again and keeping us posted on this ongoing issue and sharing. I hate to think of British Columbia as leading the way in the world when, as you mentioned, that it's just being kicked down the road by the courts here. We've got another 4 years, and who knows, it's going to be kicked down the road again. It seems like we're Charlie Brown to Lucy, we're just chasing that football and it's ever getting pulled from the tee.
Well, good luck. And it's kind of frustrating. Sometimes you can't read Canadian articles, or people in Canada can't read or share other articles from around the world. So please keep the information flowing, and you are, whether you like it or not, in British Columbia, an inspiration. And I wake up depressed sometimes, especially in the winter, but I just have to look to British Columbia and others around the world, and I get inspired and energized. And I really thank the activists and the First Nations for leading that fight.
Well, yeah, keep shining. Thanks a lot, Don, for coming on. I want to thank also Dorothea Gucciardo over there in Gaza. She herself bearing witness and fighting to help the survivors of that horror. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time.
When the summer is done, if all of Hamas hands over their guns, if they give up the soldiers they've held so far, if they let Jared Kushner build a 5-star resort on the ruins beside the Med, after all of the Palestinians are dead, now they say it's time to recognize this Palestine.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Everywhere, all the time.